agriculture ordinance, there was some concern that all of the drug businesses would move out of Multnomah County and go into other counties where there weren't forfeiture ordinances. And that, and I know at the time, the DA and the county commissioner stood up and said, great, if that's what happens, then other counties can get forfeiture ordinances and we'll move it right out of the state. This is a statewide forfeiture ordinance. And if there is a moving plan by drug operators, and I don't have any kind of illusion about their sophistication, I believe that they are quite sophisticated and that the operation is very complex. And if there is movement, I would like to think that the oversight might be able to accommodate placing the resources where the business had moved. If that were Eastern Oregon, where there hadn't been very many forfeitures and where the police, local police forces were small and strapped and couldn't afford to move, as the state police did, you know, from 8 to 66 members in narcotics enforcement, then that would be available to a larger kind of oversight. And I want to caution all of us against a kind of parochial view of the problem. The state of Oregon represents a community here. We are the community. I think that that needs to have a place in the policy consideration, at the same time appreciating what has been made very clearly as an argument for the fruits of the efforts going, returning to the agency which has expended those efforts.
If I could add one other thing dealing with finances on this, and that relates to the constitutional issue that currently, the provision that currently provides that forfeiture proceeds from state forfeitures going to the Common School Fund. Along that line, it is my sense, personally, I guess, because the League's not had a chance to talk about the issue, that HJR 3 is as important as anything the legislature can do because it removes that constitutional issue from the debate. So that's kind of an ancillary issue to your committee, but when it comes up on the floor, I hope you will all support HJR 3 because I think it's an important part of the puzzle.
That actually HJR 3 is not in the jurisdiction of this committee, but I appreciate your comments, and I think they're keeping that in mind. Representative Minnis.
What are the other issues? I haven't heard discussed, and I don't know what you can talk about. The whole issue of hazardous materials cleanup relevant to some of the raids and narcotics enterprises. It almost seems appropriate that perhaps some of these monies ought to be designated for hazardous cleanup within fire departments that are charged with that responsibility.
Actually, Representative, that I just saw an item of, I think, a little over $700,000 being requested for environmental quality out of general fund dollars to go that kind of cleanup. But that is a consideration, and again, that would be another application for your money.
I think there's an argument in favor of putting the money to the general fund because obviously we could move some of those to the fire department if that was their responsibility.
Other questions? Thank you very much. We have one more witness signed up. Gwenda Hefke, Oregon Association of Realtors. Genoa.
Does she get the Patience Award of the day?
Yes, she does.
Madam Chair, I forgot what I was going to say. I'm Genoa Hefke, Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Association of Realtors. You do have my prepared comments before you, so I will just add a few brief comments that I've jotted down while I was sitting attentively at the back of the room. Our main interest in this bill is as it relates to the property owners, particularly landlord tenants, and with respect to that, landlords who are out of state in particular, because we fear that there may be a problem with providing adequate notification to those people. The problem that we see is individuals who are engaging in the kinds of activities that we're discussing here today don't really care what happens to the property that they are utilizing for their activities, because many times it's rented, they leave town and go rent another, or maybe stay in town and just rent another unit, and they leave behind them a trail of property owners left to clean up their legal messes. We also would concur with the suggestion by the ACLU representative about the funds going to the general fund. We do have a problem with the law enforcement agencies with the attitude that I get everything, I get to keep everything I can get unless you can prove by the preponderance of the evidence that you are innocent. We have a real problem, which I have not heard addressed today, which appears on page 11, section 15, relating to alleged contaminations. We see here that at the top of page 12, a forfeiting agency may record in the mortgage records that the property may be contaminated. It does not say that this has to be proven. It just says that that they may enter that into the description of the property, that it may be contaminated. There does not appear to be any method for getting that off of the mortgage records. And because, as you'll note, there is no liability, we have a real problem with the forfeiting agency saying, well, we have no liability, let's go ahead and say, well, it may be contaminated, and the property owner is left there with a sullied title, if you will, and no means to get it to get it removed. For these reasons and others I haven't enumerated, I would request on behalf of the Oregon Association of Realtors, who does try to fight for the rights of the property owner, that an exemption be put in here for non-owner occupied property, unless, as the ACLU member indicated, that it was purchased with funds that were gained from illegal activity. One of the individuals from the, I believe it was Linn County, discussed the problem with the people who are abusing their ownership privileges. If indeed they are abusing the ownership privileges, that exemption would not, or would still address those people. We're concerned about the person who is not living on his property, who does not know what activities are going on. I also appreciated Representative Edmondson's parallel that he drew with this bill and the nuisance abatement bill, House Bill 2368. Without going into that bill, I will just say that that was one thing that we noticed, that it did provide adequate notice to the landowner and gave them an opportunity to abate the problem, and we would at the very least like to see that same opportunity granted in this measure as well. Unless there are questions, I thank you for your time.
May I inquire?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
You're saying that if there was a provision, you'd be more comfortable with the non-resident property owner having property subject to this bill. Let's assume for a moment we're not willing to throw out real property. We want to leave it in, but we want to protect someone who, say, lives in California and owns a farm here and leases it out. That if we had something in that's similar to the nuisance abatement law as far as notice, that would take care of a lot of that concern?
Yes, it would. That would certainly be the first step. And another problem that we notice is, and I have not heard it addressed today, if there is an entire rental project, if one unit is being used for illegal activity, then is the entire complex then forfeited? And
well, we addressed that earlier, at least I thought I brought up the use of the word material.
Okay.
Involvement in the criminal escapade, so that you'd be limiting it. I think some of us from some conversations are willing to require that the property have been materially involved. Material meaning significant.
I would have to say that the suggestion that you made just a few moments ago, that would ease our anxiety a bit, just so that there was some leeway. Right now it says that the property seized, and as opposed to being innocent until proven guilty, it's up to you to show by the preponderance of the evidence that you were not participating in those activities. We have a real problem with that as with respect to private property rights.
Other questions? Representative Minnis.
For some reason, the whole hearing, I was under the impression that if we were dealing with rental properties, you have an absentee owner or owner of the property has no intent or no involvement in a criminal conspiracy, criminal action, that they would not, that property would be subject to forfeiture. Under this particular bill, I mean, it kind of shocks my senses to think that that's what we're doing here. favor of forfeiture. I don't want the you know, law enforcement community to go out and subjecting people to forfeiture where there's no criminal liability to conspire to violate the law. If
Madam,
you have a tenant.
Madam Chair, Representative Minnis, that's my understanding of the bill, too. And I thought the notice provisions in here were quite similar to the, those contained in the nuisance provisions. That is, that notice would be under the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure.
That's notice after forfeiture has been instituted, though. I think she's talking about a warning ahead of time saying, look, clean up your act regarding this property or we will institute forfeiture.
Madam Chair.
Well, yes.
Earlier, I was like, you read the case law, and I'm sure Mr. Shepard has it. Case law is case after case after case of people crying to the, in all federal cases, people crying to the federal government. I think of, I remember one particular case involving a large yacht owned by a major in Korea, and his yacht was being used by his son to smuggle dope. Tough. The law is very, very stringent here on this. It has no sense of humor with it. I've finally gotten to the right of Representative Minnis.
But no, I guess I drew that too from some of the language in the bill dealing with vehicles, where if there was no intent or no involvement on the part of the ownership, or the owner of the vehicle, they weren't going to be subject to
forfeiture. No, no. The vehicle that commits the crime.
At the risk of sounding like a work session, we've got to remember that this is an in rem proceeding, and it is not personal. And that is the big distinction here. And rather than, unless create a law that is really a personal criminal sanction, this is the wrong vehicle for that. And I think that that distinction has been emphasized over and over this afternoon. This is an action against the property.
But point of clarification.
Yes, Representative.
I kind of ask a gentleman from the banking community this question. The interest of the property owner in the property rides along property as it goes through the forfeiture proceeding. So the only forfeiture is to the extent of the proceeds of the illegal activity. But it's not like a foreclosure of a house or something where the absentee owner loses all interest. The absentee owner is still the owner. Property is forfeited to the extent that the proceeds were used.
Yes, Representative Mannix.
Or to the extent the property has been used in illegal activity, and that could be the apartment was used to as a meth lab, and the question still raised here is, does that mean the entire apartment building? Maybe council has the answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, I think that first off, when it comes to a meth lab, I think the owner may wish that they'd take the apartment building. secondly, I think if it were a tenant using the apartment for those purposes and there was a forfeiture action, it would only go to his interest or her interest right in the property. That's correct, but you probably, I guess you'd be forfeiting their leasehold interest. I would hope that forfeiture counsel would not do that because from a purely a financial viewpoint, they wouldn't make any money on it. I assume you'd have to have a commercial piece of property with a long-term lease.
Excuse me, can I clarify?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
So we're saying that if I own an apartment building, better yet, a duplex, and my neighbor that I rent to puts a meth lab in the duplex, since that person only has a leasehold interest. Now, this was an in rem proceeding, we keep saying, and it relates to the property itself, not to the individual engaged in the activity. If that, the right way I read this provision, it said any property that's used is subject. It doesn't say the leasehold, but you're saying the way we would define property there is the leasehold is being used for the meth lab rather than the actual baseline ownership?
Yep.
Right?
Madam Chair, Representative
Minnix.
Getting late. Yes, it would be the property interest, it would be the leasehold interest.
Well, but have you noticed how already, an association of realtors didn't quite read the law that way, and when I first read it, I did.
Yes, Mr. Shepard.
That's my understanding, but I'm looking out in the audience, and I'm getting this from some people and no from others. So.
Madam Chairman, Representative Mannix, these are in rem actions. If the full force and scope of in rem theory were applied by House Bill 2282, then the landlord could lose their property. And the reason for that is that the property is being used for an unlawful purpose. That is not the result under House Bill 2282, either in the reality of the way that forfeiture actions are applied, even in the federal system, where the full force and scope of in-rem actions are applied, or under the practical matter of House Bill 2282. And first, as to the reality, we presently have the authority to do exactly the thing that's complained of here with respect to rental property. It's not done in the federal system because the federal government is after property that is actually used to facilitate prohibited conduct, and we're not interested in creating new victims. So as a practical matter, no forfeiture counsel is going to go after property that meets those descriptions. But then the second thing is, you don't have to rely, if you're the absentee landlord, on the good faith and good judgment of forfeiture counsel. You have an absolute defense under Section 8 of House Bill 2282 to the kind of action that's being contemplated here. And that defense is, you took the property for value before it was used for the unlawful purpose, and you were not a participant and did not have knowledge in the unlawful purpose. As a consequence, you have an absolute defense.
Something? Yes, Representative Mannix.
You also have a judge who we hope will provide the community standard of conscience in applying all this.
Indeed, we do.
Thank you. Does this address your concerns?
To some extent, Madam Chair. The question also arose, if a crime was committed but not by the property owner, is the property owner still liable for the attorney fees, or is he reimbursed? He still has to go to court and show that he did not have knowledge. Now, is he still liable for the attorney fees, or is there a mechanism here for him to be reimbursed?
Counsel.
I believe that Mr. Shepard discussed that issue earlier, and if I remember correctly, that in those situations, if you could show that the police department did not have reason to believe, is that the standard? Then in that case, you would be entitled to attorney's fees. I think under those circumstances, a lot of courts would think you had pretty good grounds for attorney's fees, in my personal opinion.
Representative Calhoun, and then...
Thank you. Just a comment on that. It seems that the court might have a reason. Officer would obviously be around if they were coming, found the drugs there on the property. They had more than found they were correct when they found them, but that wouldn't necessarily provide the owner of the property away and have to bring. If ultimately they said, you're right, it was not you, it was your renter who was the person that was at fault, so therefore now that you've proven yourself innocent, we're gonna give you your property. I don't think if the any right to attorney's fees. I don't know if that's right or
not. Well, we're struggling with that. Representative Edmondson.
I just want to, Madam Chair, I would like to flag, and perhaps Mr. Shepard can comment on this now or later, if it'd be more expeditious. Section 8, I thought that was a good faith purchaser of property and was not a landlord defense, but now the testimony indicates that it is a landlord defense, and it doesn't say that, and I think it should if that's what's intended. And I'd also like to point out that subsection 3 of Section 8 prohibits this defense from being asserted by a financial institution with a security interest. So I guess that means if a finance institution holds the property, it can't assert that defense. And perhaps I think that needs to be clarified when we get to work session. This might be an area we need to look at, this section. That's where the defense lies, then we need to say that very clearly, because I sure didn't pick that up when I read it the first time.
Thank you, Representative Edmondson. Other questions from the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We will be adjourning. There will be a work session on March 6th on House Bill 2282. To everybody, the committee is adjourned.